Elizabeth Edwards has added a new chapter to her memoir. It chronicles last spring's announcement that her breast cancer is back, it's spread, and it's now incurable. The bestseller is called Saving Graces, Finding Solace and Strength from Friends and Strangers. The need for solace threads through this memoir, anguished stories of loss at the heart of which is the death of her son. Models of strength include her father, a much-decorated Navy pilot. Though it caused controversy at the time, Elizabeth Edwards chose to get out on the presidential campaign trail with her husband John, despite her cancer. She's proved a tough campaigner and one willing to open fire on his chief rivals, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Elizabeth Edwards joined us from our New York bureau. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, in your book, you write that you want the days that you have left to be, and I'll quote you here, days of laughter and brownie making. I'm sure there's some of that every day, but describe what you do every day now that you're on the campaign trail.
No day is like the day before. Fortunately, I have very adaptable children because they've been asked to play it by ear for the last several months and going to have a little bit more of that. I hope that's making them stronger. But we did a bus tour in Iowa where we get on a bus. The children might be with us for the first part of the day, but they tire of the town hall meetings pretty quickly.
And these are little, just to remind people, this is 7-year-old Jack and 9-year-old Emma Claire. These are little kids.
They are, and they're pretty good for a portion of the day. And then they might go off, might be to a water park or a state park. We've gone, you know, I think in Iowa they saw the world's largest popcorn ball. So they're getting a lot of great experiences and then a little touch of what John's and my life has been.
You know, I know your husband's longtime message has been centered on economic disparities, the two Americas,
yes,
as he calls it. And both your illness and the loss of your teenage son, Wade, has given you a special link to people who have had those or similar experiences. But in this campaign, another big issue is the war in Iraq. You were raised in a Navy family. Has that become a link as well?
I think that when I talk about issues with respect to the military, it's almost like when I talk about breast cancer. People realize that I have a certain degree of experience here, and they understand that I'm not likely to say something that would be against the interest of people who serve in the military, against their families, or against veterans. Those are against my family. And so I think I get a little more credibility on these issues. John McCain, for example, gets a lot of credibility because of his personal experience, and I think I get some. So I can talk about the war or about how we're not doing what we need to do for our veterans, how we completely forget military families as if they didn't exist and weren't making a sacrifice as well. So people will listen to me on that, which is great because I have pretty strong opinions, and so does John, about where we need to go on all these issues.
Your father, when you were a young girl and you were stationed in several times in Japan, your family, your father used to disappear. And early memory is of children who lost their fathers.
My dad was in a reconnaissance squadron. It meant that he left sometimes to go have missions. He couldn't tell us where he was going because they were spying, and it was a secret. It's dangerous work, and sometimes they were shot at. My father was shot at during the time that my dad was in this squadron in a very small military community. We lost a couple of planes, and we would see the devastation that happened to these families when there was loss, but we'd also see communities pulling together. One of the reasons I included it in the book is it's an enormous part of the formation of my sense of the importance of community to us.
Of late, when you've been written about, you've been described variously as the sort of attacker in residence, or you're out there delivering the tough message, you know, that, you know, could be your role because you're a real straight talker.
Nobody's carved out a role for me. No one has said, we want you to do this or we want you to do that. No one has suggested that I say it in a particular way. They may know me well enough to think that's a waste of time. I'm simply answering the questions that are asked. If you ask me about John's health care policy or about his education policy or environment, you know, I can give you lots and lots of minutes on those things. But if somebody asks me something that might be more inflammatory, that's what ends up being covered.
Do you think you have any protection from John Edwards' opponents attacking back because of your illness?
I hope not. I hope that they, you know, because what I'm talking about are not personal attacks, but, you know, about their policies or very often their lack of policies or the complete record on issues. I would love to engage in that kind of a dialogue. I hope that they're not avoiding the dialogue because of my health condition. That should absolutely be inconsequential in having this important discussion.
The last few pages of the book, in the new chapter, you write, we've been asked if we're in denial about the cancer. We're not. Which means?
I may not know exactly when I'm going to die, and I really am not keeping a secret from anybody. I honestly don't know. I feel very happy that I'm still asymptomatic, and which is apparently a very good sign. But I don't know. So it is true that as I determine what to do with my life, I take that into consideration. I'm a little more careful with how I spend my time than I might have been before, thinking if I waste a month or so, it's not the, you know, not the end of the world. Now, a month seems like a pretty long time.
There is something very lovely that you wrote. This was when your family was stationed in Japan. You were a young girl. And it's about, well, in a way, how lives go on. It's about Obon, a particular holiday.
It's a summer festival that the Japanese have that honor the people who have died. And it goes on actually for several days. But the last day of Obon is clearly the most moving. That last night of Obon, the little boats would be set out on the river, and the landscape would gleam with the tiny flames and then gleam again with the reflection of those flames in the water and on the white paper sails of some of the boats. The beauty and the glory of this image never left me. Not just the image, but the sense that all these souls, thousands of them, were being led by the delicacies their families had prepared and by the lights in the bows glistening above the black water, and that all of the souls were traveling together to be on the other side of the river, together. Even if in life they may not have known each other, these souls were crossing back across the river, formed a great and glorious, even joyous, community.
Elizabeth Edwards, thank you very much for joining us.
It was always wonderful to be with you.
Elizabeth Edwards' memoir, now with a new chapter, is called Saving Graces. You can read an excerpt at our website, npr.org.